Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Is Tech News Today for Thursday, June 2nd, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office. Don't just sell it, gazelle it. For a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets, go to gazelle.com, bonus code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day along with you to try to make sense of it all. D9 still in full effect.
Right, yeah, it is.
Yo. That's right.
You know how we roll.
That's how I talk in the mean streets of San Rafael.
Yeah.
Ralph De La Vega from AT&T, one of the folks on stage, just confirmed that the carrier is working on a shared data plan. Meaning if you've got multiple devices, like iPad, iPhone, all that stuff, that eventually they will offer one data plan for everything.
Ooh, that's could be very convenient.
They're working on it, so there's nothing concrete at all.
Yeah, no details, whether they would have an incredibly low data cap on it. Because if it's a shared data plan, you're going to need more data.
They could also combine all the fees that they had for the different plans and just call it one plan. It's one bill.
It's the mega fee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they don't have any details on exactly what the shared data plan will be.
For easy overcharging.
I still got the unlimited plan, at least on my iPad.
I have
iPad, AT&T, and then I've got Verizon iPhone, so it's like...
I have unlimited on my iPhone.
I wouldn't bite this. Do you?
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm grandfathered.
Yeah, you just
or grandmothered in. Why is it always grandfathered? Why can't you be grandmothered in?
How about great aunt?
Yeah, I've been great aunted.
Got a great aunt plan on my iPad.
De La Vega also was asked why we should believe that AT&T is competent enough to control what will end up being the biggest cell phone network in the United States if the T-Mobile merger is approved. De La Vega said, "We're not happy with the status of customer satisfaction, and we're working to improve it. Our customers are happier than they were before," when they were totally pissed all the time. He didn't say that part. He said, "When we overlay our network with T-Mobile's, you'll see a dramatic improvement. Our customers will be able to use any cell site, AT&T or T-Mobile, and that will give them an immediate benefit. We are pulling every lever humanly possible to improve our service."
So it's like an old steamship. They have a bunch of levers.
That's the problem. And that's why they need to charge more to improve their infrastructure, because they're still running on levers.
Well, it's funny. People are so quick to complain about AT&T service. So it's like, are they really pulling every lever? If so, then they don't have much power, do they?
I mean, they're not even happy with their own customer service. So they're dissatisfied with the dissatisfaction. Is that what's going on here? So it's just meta dissatisfaction right now.
Yeah, it is something like that. It's one of those fine lines that a company walks. If they know that they're not doing a good job, do you come out and say, "Yeah, we suck"? No.
Well, Domino's Pizza did that, right?
That's true,
said,
actually.
We suck, and we're going to be better now. Versus these guys saying, "We will be better because we'll buy more stuff.
We're going to buy our way into your hearts. We're going to give you no other choice but us in the end, and then you'll love us. You'll have to."
If they had really cheap plans and good service, maybe that would do it. People wouldn't be calling in to complain.
Money can't buy you love, AT&T.
Yesterday at D9, Steven Sinofsky from Microsoft showed off Windows 8, and it is quite different. Mm-hmm. Windows 8 comes with a default UI that looks kind of like the Metro UI from Windows Phone. It's tiles. Mm-hmm. It overlays the normal desktop. It's built for a touch interface, though it will work with a mouse and keyboard. It will support normal Windows apps. If you go through a tile to a Windows 7-like desktop, but in the tile section, apps will be written in HTML or JavaScript. They say it'll work on either x86 or ARM. Obviously, we'll get a new version of Internet Explorer. And when you're in the tile view, you'll be able to snap an app to the side of the screen so that kind of like the way you're able to snap an app in Windows 7 now, mm-hmm. except you're in this more tablet-oriented touchscreen mode. And you're able to have two apps up and running at the same time.
So it's like a windowing system, but two windows, and they're predefined.
There's also a tile for a store, if you notice. So I have a feeling that we'll be seeing some kind of Windows 8 application store similar to the OS X store.
I don't know. How do we feel about this? looks pretty nice.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I think as far as a tablet goes, it's a very compelling interface.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're not going to see this till 2012. So I don't know how it's going to compare to other things by the year 2012, because we're going to see several revisions of Android. And we'll see at least one, if not two, revisions of iPad.
Although you don't see, you know, at least not so far, Android going in the direction of what Windows Phone looks like now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's any reason to believe that they would in the next year. Although this looks good.
Well, then again, I mean, the Windows tiles pretty much are just rectangular widgets, right? Like you have a weather widget, but they're calling it a tile. So, I mean, Android already does have a bunch of widgets that are just differently shaped and that kind of thing. I liked the fact that they've really distinguished themselves. I mean, this doesn't look like any other UI other than the Windows Phone 7. And a lot of people think this is just a skin over Windows 7. I don't know if that's really accurate. I mean, it depends.
No, it's not. It's not a skin. It's a platform.
And I think it really depends on how Microsoft goes ahead and markets this. If you get a tablet device and the first thing you see is the old Windows 7 and Windows 8 experience, and then you have to launch this as an application, that's going to be really lame. But if
that's not the way they're going to do it. This will be the default install. You will get this tile interface. So I think it's the opposite problem. I think this is going to work great on tablets. We'll see what the battery life is like.
Mm-hmm.
But the Microsoft says that this will work on any current Windows 7 certified processor and any setup. So the you're not going to need a more advanced machine to run this, which means it probably won't be as burdensome to next generation tablet processors. It's going to run on ARM. It's going to run on x86. So when you're on a tablet, I think it's almost ideal, at least right now. If this was coming out within a month, I'd say Microsoft was ready to shoot their way to the top of the tablet world. Coming out in over a year, I don't know.
They're just keeping that tradition of being last.
I'm more worried on the desktop side.
Yeah.
If you're going to be as interested in getting Windows 8, if you have to work in this weird tile space on your desktop when you need multiple windows in the old metaphor. And yes, you can go and you can get that old metaphor, but they're calling that Windows 7. They're saying you can still get to your Windows 7 desktop. So that implies to me that there's not going to be much improvement to things for that type of interface, if you want to use the old metaphor.
Well, if you're going to go with this tile interface and you're going to be able to switch back, I mean, tablets are really good at doing a couple of things, but every now and then I know I get frustrated with a tablet and go, I wish I had a real computer. At least you have Windows in the background and you can use that whenever you want. I mean, this is something that Android doesn't have in the background. They have Linux. I know that's underneath, but it's not like you can switch to a Windows-based system. You can't do that with iOS either. Like, sometimes you just get frustrated with this device. You can't do full-fledged computing. I'm thinking this would actually give Microsoft an advantage, because if anybody else tries this, it's going to be like, hey, didn't Microsoft show this off last year? Even though they'll be probably last to get it to market.
And you can change the default. Once you install it, you can say, I want to go into the old-fashioned one. So if you're on a desktop, you can just get rid of it. But I think that's the problem is, I don't think anybody on the desktop world, or even too many people in the laptop world, are going to use this. I think the new interface is going to be great for tablets.
Yeah.
I withhold judgment on whether it's going to be as good as it seems today in a year. It may still be. But they are giving away a bit of the store by showing it off this early.
Well, it doesn't look like it's completed yet. I mean, they still have to get a whole lot of apps in there. They have a store coming, so obviously who knows what kind of tiles will be there in the future. And again, like, because it's Microsoft Windows, I mean, Windows is on like 90% of the desktops out there. When this shows up, they already have a developer base. I mean, so that's another plus they could have. Let's say you had an Office app. They're like, hey, by the way, we're going to give a little tile too on top of it. It could always be bundled together.
We also don't know if it's actually going to be a year from now. I mean, Ballmer said 2012, and then a PR exec said, well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, what if they were trying to rush us out for Christmas and they just don't want someone to say, or holiday season, they don't want anyone to say 2012 because they're not sure when they'll be done.
Yeah, I suppose that's always possible. Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly today said that Steve Sinofsky is well known for not wanting to show anything off until it's done.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinks this is what it's going to look like when you buy it. This is what it's going to be like, which would imply if they're that far along, maybe
we're not that far off.
The other thing that's interesting about this is Windows 8 will actually work alongside Windows 7 in the enterprise. So if you're in the enterprise, you don't have to upgrade your entire system to Windows 8. You can continue to use Windows 7 for all your licenses and just add licenses that have Windows 8 on them. And there was even some talk that if you're part of the subscription system, you could just flip your licenses to Windows 8. And it, You know, it wouldn't be that big of a deal, except for the IT part of it, which is always a big deal. But you could roll it out as slowly or as fast as you want. At Computex in Taiwan last night, Microsoft also showed off ARM-powered Windows 8 prototypes. We got to see demonstration models from Foxconn, Wistron, and Quanta, all using chips from Qualcomm, Texas Instruments, and NVIDIA. That was the Cal-L chip from NVIDIA. Got a couple of processor announcements as well. Texas Instruments announced a multi-core 1.8 gigahertz OMAP 4470 ARM processor that will run Android and Linux, but also Windows 8. Qualcomm announced a dual and quad-core Snapdragon processor designed to support Windows 8. Qualcomm's dual-core has integrated 3G LTE modem capability, speeds of up to 2.5 gigahertz, and it will be followed in early 2012 by the quad-core Snapdragon APQ 8064. In addition to this, in a separate announcement, Microsoft says it has postponed its integrated development program for Windows 8. That was the one we talked about the last couple of days that Acer was complaining about, mm-hmm. where each manufacturer had to pair up with each chip provider and would get incentives to do so. Microsoft says it's going to revise the plan after consulting with partners.
Interesting.
The fact that Microsoft had all these things at Computex, they had the AMD devices, they had Intel devices, they had ARM devices, maybe that lends more credibility to the idea that this might be closer to done than we thought. I mean, why would they just show off these tablets if they're not relatively soon? I mean we've seen Steve Ballmer do something like that in the past, mm-hmm. showing off the HP Slate, which never came out for consumers. I don't know if they would do that twice.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that came out of Computex were some restrictions for tablets. To get that new interface, that Metro-looking interface, your tablet will have to offer a resolution of at least 1024 by 768. Anything lower than that would be stuck with the classic interface, the so-called Windows 7 interface. Increasing the resolution from 43 1024 by 768 to 169 1366 by 768 will enable that snap side-by-side multitasking view that we talked about.
What do you think about Microsoft controlling so many requirements to run its software? I mean, it used to be, it's Windows, you buy the license, you run it on anything. We don't care if it's 640 by 480, go.
Because they want to control the experience. I mean, they've got something that looks good, and they want to keep that, you know, under their umbrella.
Taking a page from Apple.
Yeah,
they're actually less controlling
so.
Than Apple still, because right, they allow other people to make hardware, so...
But I think they've seen, I mean, Apple has shown that they're extremely restrictive and that bothers a lot of people. But at the same time, they have a really good handle on what user experience turns out to be. So if Microsoft can replicate that with a good product, they might be onto something.
If they controlled everything end to end, it could be like the Kin or the Xbox. So
yeah, it could go either way.
So let's see how
that's
that
a good
goes.
Point. You just never know. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Gazelle. If you're thinking that, hey, maybe there will be a Windows 8 tablet by the end of the year and I want to buy one, you got to start saving your money now. And you can start saving money by selling off some of your old gadgets, your old smartphones, your MP3 players, laptops, gaming consoles. Gazelle, if you're lazy like me, I just don't have time to go and try to sell individually every single one of my devices to other people. Gazelle is the solution. It saves me time and makes me money. I just go and I put my devices up on Gazelle. They tell me how much it's worth. I send it to them. They send me a check or a PayPal or an Amazon gift certificate. There's lots of ways to be paid. But the point is, you easily find your stuff, put it up, get money, and you don't have to deal with the waiting and looking to see if someone's making an offer or not. You let Gazelle take care of all of that for you, and you get your money fast. 20 product categories, over 200,000 unique items, and if they can't give you money for something, if it's too old or just too broken, they'll still take it and they'll recycle it for you. They actually have a very reputable recycling program, guaranteeing that will not end up in a landfill. So check them out. Go to gazelle.com. Use the bonus code CHWIT. And you'll get 5% more than everybody else.
It's
a little
deal.
Inside knowledge as a listener to Tech News Today. And we thank Gazelle for their support of Tech News Today. All right, folks. We didn't think we'd have to play this again, but it's time for Sony Hack of the Day. A new Sony hack has come. At least it's been claimed by Lulzsec. Lulzsec, of course.
Doing it for the lulz.
They are the folks who defaced PBS and then said, we're going after Sony next. They have posted on their website a list of databases that they say they have gotten, mostly from Sony Pictures. The databases have things like passwords and email accounts and all that sort of thing. They even put a press release out to describe what they've done. SonyPictures.com Auto Trader users, SonyPictures.com Summer of Restless Beauty users, things like that. None of this stuff looks as terrifying. I don't see credit card information, but there is username and password stuff here. And they claim that Sony just stored some of this stuff in plain text. They also claim that it was really easy. It was just a simple SQL injection attack. International Business Times contacted Sony, and a Sony spokesperson said in a statement, "We have been performing regular, thorough testing of the implemented security enhancements. After investigating further, there is no indication that the claim by Lulzsec is accurate at the moment."
Are we getting, is this the same kind of thing with viruses at this point? Or do we, should we keep reporting that Lulzsec did something, or should we even be talking about this? Are we giving them more press?
I think it's hard not to because it's Sony.
Yeah.
And they've they've had so much attention for insecurity issues, obviously, over the last couple of months. But your question is,
are we encouraging this behavior by saying, hey, it was Lulzsec?
Every time something happens, we're going to talk about it.
Right. It's when people jump off the Golden Gate Bridge, it doesn't make the papers because they don't want to contribute to publicizing that sort of behavior. Or when fans run on the field in sports, they usually don't show them on television because they don't want to encourage that kind of behavior. Is this that kind of thing, or is it more of civil disobedience? Is it someone, you know, saying, look, Sony is wrong in the way they conduct business and we're going after them?
Well, yeah, if you're going after them, okay, so these guys are basically kicking in Sony's doors and they're saying, we don't like what you're doing in there. Is that really their business to do that at all?
McKinley Tabor wrote in and said, "Dear TNT, in the abstract, dressing up like an Indian and tossing boxes of tea into the Boston Harbor was a juvenile and criminal act. Hacktivism is in part about the natural human desire to fight injustice. While no one should live under the threat of mob cyber violence, people and organizations should understand that when they step far outside the realm of socially acceptable behavior, Sony suing GeoHots or the U.S. government's treatment of Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks, there are repercussions." That's what McKinley says.
Yeah, if you're committing crimes, you shouldn't. I don't know if you should be celebrated for that. I mean, calling it hacktivism, right? It's activism, but you're a criminal.
But we celebrate the Boston Tea Party here in the United States.
It still was a criminal act.
Yeah, so we shouldn't celebrate that?
I'm not saying whether we should celebrate this. That's the Boston Tea Party, right? That's a whole nationalistic, patriotic argument. It's almost impossible.
Seen that way now.
I also don't think we're... I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not celebrating this. I'm just sort of like, wow, Sony. Someone found another way into Sony. Yet another arm of Sony is not as secure as they would have hoped.
And at this point, I think it's almost unfair to Sony in a way because they are so big.
Yes.
That Sony PlayStation Network locking down does not mean Sony Pictures locks down. The Sony online store, the Sony Style store locks down.
Right.
I mean, these are all part of a huge conglomerate, but a lot of them don't even get along. Sony Electronics and Sony Pictures are constantly at each other's throat because Sony Pictures wants to lock down your ability to do what you want with the movies that you buy, whereas Sony Electronics is all about no DRM. We want to make electronics that allow you to do whatever you want. So even within the Sony empire, they can't communicate.
It demonstrates that hackers who are hacking Sony aren't even necessarily understanding how the brand Sony is put together. I mean, Sony encompasses so many things. I mean, many employees have never heard of each other and don't know what the other person does, but they both technically work for some department of Sony. You know, they're not bringing down part of Sony Pictures really has nothing to do with GeoHots.
Right. And that brings us back to what we've said before, which is, who are you punishing when you publish a bunch of usernames and passwords?
Well,
are you punishing the company? Yes, but you're also punishing the people who use the company, and
right.
And maybe there's an extreme point of view that says, well, people shouldn't be supporting that company. That's their danger.
Well, but what about employees' families and names of their children and things like that? I mean, it's really hard to justify some of the behavior, for sure.
We got another weird law being passed in Tennessee. A new bill just signed by the governor of Tennessee would make it a crime to use a friend's login, or use anyone's login, even with permission, to listen to songs or watch movies from services such as Netflix or Rhapsody. The bill is being pushed by recording industry officials. Stealing $500 or less of entertainment would be ruled a misdemeanor, punishable by up to a year in jail and a fine of $2,500. Theft with a higher price tag would be a felony and receive heavier felony-level penalties.
So if you say, hey, Sarah, I realize that you don't have a Netflix subscription. Here's my credentials, and I log in and watch a movie.
I am violating the law in Tennessee.
And
we're both in Tennessee.
And you have committed a misdemeanor?
Depends on how much you watch. I guess if you watch over $500, I might be committing a felony. But yes, on the face of it, I'm committing a misdemeanor.
Are we both committing the misdemeanor? Or is it you because
yes.
you shared it to me?
You are committing a misdemeanor because you're using a login, even with permission.
Punishable by up to a year in prison or a $2,500 fine, or was that an and? This thing, I was looking at this law and this amendment, and it's been driving me insane because it's they're putting this electronic services or entertainment services piece of law into something that's supposed to be covering like Dine and Dash. Okay, so like you go in, you get services at a restaurant, and then you leave, you didn't pay, you're a criminal. Yeah, that makes sense. But the idea is that this would actually criminalize behavior even within your own home. Now, it doesn't say that directly, but it's written so broadly.
Well, that's the thing. All the defenders of this law say, look, that's not who we're after. We're after these people who do go out and sell passwords and distribute passwords to people. So they create one Netflix account for $8 a month, and then they go and they sell that password to thousands of people, mm-hmm. thus depriving Netflix of the ability to make money off those people.
That's a great intent. That's not what's in the law, though. That's the problem with this. The law's way, way too broad.
But don't worry, Ayaz. They're not going to enforce it that broadly.
Oh, yeah, but they couldn't, right? Because it does leave it open. They actually asked Bill Ramsey, a Nashville lawyer, his entertainment law and criminal defense. He said he doubts the law would be used to ban people in the same household, which means there's nothing clear. If he doubts it, they probably won't.
Well, in other words, he doesn't intend it to, and no one he's talked to intends to, but that doesn't mean someone down the line might not get elected to office or rise to a position of responsibility to the point where they'd say, you know what, we're gonna put a stop to this.
Overly broad laws can be misinterpreted way easier than really narrow ones.
But sure, do you enforce an overly broad law like this?
Netflix isn't going to do this, but let's say there is a company out there, maybe it's Sony's, you know, online streaming service, Curiosity,
yes.
decides to look for people who are logging in from multiple IP addresses and hand that over to law enforcement and say, you should go investigate this and find out if they're sharing a login and put them in jail. Put them in jail is the part that really gets me.
For up to a year.
Up to a year.
A year in jail?
This is not a jailable offense.
It's punishable by a year and a fine of $25,000.
First of all, this thing should be written more strictly to say, if you are stealing service, then because it's going in the same law with Dine and Dash and with, you know, stealing cable service, going out and hooking up a cable outside and descrambling and not paying for it. And I think the intent of the law isn't necessarily bad. We can debate that. But the idea of saying you shouldn't take something you don't pay for is fair. But what does that mean? Does that mean if I live with my wife, I can't let her log into my Netflix account?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well,
so what?
I mean, you guys want to go to jail together, go for it.
We have experience writing laws in this country for several hundred years. Mm-hmm. I think we could write a law that says we're only going after people who are taking service that they shouldn't, not against, if you're in the same house, you reside in the same location, that doesn't violate the law. If you only do it once a year, that doesn't, you could write this so that it doesn't punish the small time people and still go after those people who are handing it out in large amounts and say, you know, and violating the terms. But you brought up in prep that you don't even have to have a law to do that.
There's no reason for this to be a crime punishable by jail or fine or anything. If it's Netflix and they're seeing that one account's being used in like 20 different locations, they can just say, look, our terms of service are simple. You can't do that. We're cutting off service. So then either you're going to pay for Netflix or you won't, right? That's what's going to happen.
I guess they could say it's hard to detect, though.
Well, that's up to the companies to do this.
How do you detect whether a different person has logged in?
A different person or different IP addresses and the amount of time
it's
happening.
Yeah, but what if Tom...
I'm traveling.
What if Tom comes over to my house and uses my computer to log into Netflix to watch a movie?
So the idea that they couldn't contact you... I mean, Netflix, I mean, these companies are doing
it.
So they're going to go, hey, was it you that watched that movie?
Yeah, it's the burden of doing business. It is not for them to say.
It's an unreasonable cost to say I'm going to contact someone every time a different IP address shows up.
To make it a crime is even crazier than saying, hey, company, you might have to call somebody or email them.
I think it's fine to have a law that says, you know, there's a stiff fine for somebody to do this. And if we prove that they're trying to build a business and sell it to thousands of people, then maybe it's a more serious crime with a bigger fine. But I don't think anyone should go to jail for this. That's just ridiculous.
This thing should be tossed out and rewritten completely.
All right. Disney's Bob Iger, also at D9, talking about a new Disney.com streaming site set to launch next year in 2012. Of course, we're all going to die in a fire in 2012. We know that. But they still plan to launch stuff then. The site will have gaming and streaming video content and will be monetized by a subscription service, advertising, pay-per-view, micropayments even. This is going to put them up against Netflix and Hulu.
Well, sort of. I mean, ABC.com already has their own content on ABC.com before they were part of Hulu, and now Hulu has the content as well. I mean, it just seems like, obviously, there would be, hey, look, we get this first. So here we go. Here is some content first, and we can charge you a little bit more. I can imagine a bunch of different windows happening where you get, okay, Disney.com gets it first, so you pay $20. And then you wait like 6 months, and it's on Hulu for like free, and you have these little ads in there. It just seems like it's the standard way to go now for content companies. They just distribute their media directly.
I think, yes. I think absolutely we're going to see a model. I think the model on the internet has been coalescing for the past 15 or 20 years, which is your content originator has a site where you can get all of the stuff from that content originator. And then content aggregators exist for people who are like, well, I want to see a sampling of stuff from a lot of different places. So you have Google News and you have a newspaper website, right? Or a technology news website. And I think that's what Disney's saying is, look, we don't have a problem with Hulu and Netflix. They're the aggregator for folks who want to see stuff from lots of different places. But we have so much good stuff, we're going to publish it. And why wouldn't they?
Yeah, on top of that, I mean, a lot of their movies are kind of labeled Disney's whatever movie. Disney's whatever. So you kind of know that Disney's putting out, actually, you will know eventually, they own Marvel. So you're going to see like Disney's Avengers. So you go, oh, I'll go to Disney.com.
Well, you know who loves things like Disney's whatever? Kids.
No. Yeah. The kids?
You know, you got kids in your house.
Oh, they're
going to
make sure
they sign up for this service.
Absolutely.
And your dinner time becomes a lot more fun.
And you're running
well, and don't forget, we're not just talking about the Disney brand, though. We're also talking about the other brands they own, like ABC, would be part of this as well. And ABC has been a leader in kind of saying, we're going to have ABC.com streaming. We're going to have an ABC app on the iPad. And I think Disney is looking at that and saying, hey, that works. Let's apply that to the rest of the company in general. Finally, a last note on Apple's malware cycle before we just cast it into the same category as Windows. Apple struck back at Mac Defender with an update. Mac Defender came up with a variant, and it took Apple at least 24 hours to respond to the new variant of Mac Defender, dubbed OS X Mac Defender C. Judging by the publication time of an article, Ars Technica thinks that it was about 24 hours. They were able to verify that the definitions had been updated by checking the file online. And so within 24 hours, you should get that file on your laptop if you're running OS X, or your desktop if you're running OS X. But you should remember that because Apple's only checking every 24 hours, which is before they would only put new definitions in when there was a software update, and that would only come every few months. Mm-hmm. Now they're checking every 24 hours for definitions, but you are vulnerable for up to 24 hours. 23 hours and 59 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you practice the same standard, hey, don't open anything that you didn't mean to. Did you download this? Do you remember? Should you have to write your password for this? Don't download everything. Don't run everything. So now Windows users can pat people on the back, Mac users, and say, okay, so here's what you got
to
do.
Welcome to our world. And with that, I believe we will no longer talk about Mac malware, as it will just be
malware.
Unless it's, you know, really specifically bad for some reason. But we don't talk about every Windows virus or every Linux virus. Hmm? Not many Linux.
Just the big ones.
Viruses, but
just
yeah.
The cool ones.
All right. Welcome to the rest of the world, Mac users. On to the news feed.
Sorry, I totally had the wrong thing queued up there, obviously.
Play it. Welcome to a different
play
segment.
Play it again, Howell.
I just was feeling
play
the
again,
true
Sam.
Sense of randomizer, so I thought I'd
yes.
randomly play the randomizer drop. How about we do news fuse instead?
Like a jam band.
Okay.
I like it.
Take it from Congressman Anthony Weiner. You want to be careful with picture posting services. Flickr and YFrog, among others, allow users to send a photo to a special email account for automatic posting. Thing is, format of those are often easy to guess. YFrog's for instance, is a user ID followed by a 5 to 6 letter word. So if you can brute force guess that 5 to 6 letter word, you can post to anyone's Twitter account you want, even pictures of underwear, as the good congressman has sadly learned for himself.
Is it Anthony Weiner or Weiner?
I was being charitable.
I see. All right. We'll get official details about Apple's iCloud service at WWDC on Monday, but CNET's reporting that Apple cut a deal with Universal Music, meaning all 4 major labels are signed up for the new cloud service, whatever it may turn out to be. The service is rumored to store only music from iTunes at first, with streaming and the ability to store music from outside iTunes coming later. LA Times reports it'll cost $25 a year.
A freelance researcher, Efim Bushmanov, I can never say these names, has reverse-engineered the Skype protocol and has also made the source code available for download. While that's not illegal in the U.S. or Europe, it is against Skype's terms of service to reverse-engineer its software. So the clock is ticking to see how long Microsoft talks on the matter.
Paul Siglia claims that he owns 50% of Facebook based on past dealings with Zuckerberg and is suing to prove ownership. Facebook and Zuckerberg have now asked the court to have Siglia turn over the original contract and the emails and his computers. Facebook's court filing was full of moxie, saying this discovery will bring this case to an immediate end by establishing that the purported contract and emails are forgeries and this entire lawsuit is a fraud. They're going to sue you.
They love
I've always thought that about court. Facebook. They've got moxie.
They sure do.
Groupon has filed for an IPO with the SEC with a goal to raise $750 million. The filing disclosed some solid numbers like Groupon's 83 million subscribers over 43 countries. Not too shabby. No word on whether Groupon will offer free shares if 3 of your friends buy shares too.
Yesterday, we reported that a number of Gmail accounts, including some belonging to U.S. officials, were the subject of a phishing scam. Google blamed China for the hack, but China has since denied responsibility for the attack. U.S. Secretary of State Clinton said that the FBI will launch an investigation to find out the truth.
You can't handle the truth, Hillary. Eurogamer reports that the NGP, or will it be called the PS Vita, will be compatible with existing downloadable PSP games. The site says that it has seen Resistance Retribution demonstrated on the handheld and that all PSP games are run via a software emulator that lets you turn upscaling on or off. Games will also be able to take advantage of the NGP's dual analog sticks.
Google, Yahoo, and Bing are joining forces to create schema.org. The site is meant to be a one-stop destination for site developers so they can learn about structured data and improve their search rankings using more than 100 new forms of markup. The idea is that a site developer wouldn't have to optimize for 3 different search engines if they just use the info at schema.
What? Search engines? Cooperating? Cats? Dogs?
Harmony?
Living together?
Raining?
That just seems random.
Randomizer.
Our randomizer story today comes from Agence France-Presse. It says that a Malaysian social activist on Thursday agreed to post an apology on Twitter 100 times over the next 3 days in a novel settlement to a defamation suit. So like unfollow.
I don't want to hear it.
It's like a Bart Simpson.
Stop apologizing.
So you have to write it 100 times. I mean, is he cutting and pasting? Is he using a service like Hootsuite? And it's like, oh, yeah, publish every 3 hours. He's 30.
Fadzil tweeted in January that a pregnant friend of his had been treated badly at Female Magazine owned by Blue Ink Media. The magazine's lawyers threatened legal action, and he posted an apology. They said, that's not enough.
You apologize 100 times.
Now he has to apologize 100 times.
And now everyone who needs to know about the apology has already blocked him.
Yes, for sure.
Kind of how that works. 100 tweet. Oh, wow. That's just Malaysia.
Who knew? On to the calendar.
Foxconn has reopened its iPad plant. As we expected, they blamed aluminum dust for the explosion that killed 3 workers and injured many more. The PlayStation Store is up as of last night. Welcome back packages will be available soon. I'm making air quotes. Soon, according to Sony's blog post.
There they
See?
Are.
Yeah. Air quotes.
They look like little creatures.
Yeah, I know they're alive.
Are you tickling the blog?
Hi, Sony. The Evo 4G is getting gingerbread on June 6th. Stop pinching us. Or Friday, if you're willing to manually check for its availability, you can get gingerbread a little bit early for your Evo 4G. Nintendo 3DS eShop is going to launch also on June 6th. Previously, they had said the 7th, so it's a whole day earlier. It'll be a full internet browser that you can launch without exiting the game. And a free copy of the NES classic, Excitebike. Yeah, who doesn't want that? Pre-order your 10.1-inch LTE Galaxy Tab on June 8th at Verizon. Or, if you live in New York City, you can pick one up at the Best Buy in Union Square. It'll be in stores everywhere on June 17th. And the HTC Evo View 4G Flyer is headed to Sprint on June 24th. The Toshiba Thrive tablet with Android 3.1 ships in July, starting at $429.
All right, got a couple voicemails today. Thanks to folks for calling in and leaving some good stuff for us at 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll start with a call about the battle against banning Wi-Fi in schools.
Hello, this is Brian calling from Milton, Ontario, Canada. I just want to say that our school board, the Halton District School Board, put forth a motion to ban wireless technology. And this is about last week, and I put my name forward to delegate. And I just want to thank you for putting out so much information in the past 2 weeks in regards to both cell phones and wireless technology, because it very much helped me in my speech that I made to the board. And just for your information, the board did not approve the ban.
Yay.
So thank you very much, TNT. Bye.
That's excellent.
Awesome. Hooray for logic being used.
But yes, I'm glad. I'm happy that we were able to help.
Absolutely.
That makes
Thanks
me
for listening.
Feel a little
or
awesome.
Watching.
Thanks.
Or both.
Also, got a call with an idea about subscriptions and magazines.
Hey, gang. This is Dave Taylor. In reference to publications that charge less for getting both the print and online versions, how about setting your shipping address to that of a school or library if you only want the online version? I'm just saying.
Because if you were in Tennessee, that'd be a felony because you're sharing your entertainment services,
yeah, that's
are
right.
you?
Yeah.
You know, you can actually, no, with kidding. We talked about this on iPad today, with the Wall Street Journal anyway, and I'm not sure how this works for other publications, you can suspend your print delivery for up to 24 months. So if you're paying for your print subscription and you're getting the iPad version for free, you can actually just stop at least having that printed out version sent to you. But still get the iPad version. So you don't actually save money, yeah. You save trees.
I know at the San Francisco Chronicle, when you go on vacation, you can choose to have your subscription continue, but your paper delivered to schools. So if you had that option with an iPad app, you know, a company that offered an iPad app, you could just go on vacation forever.
Well, hopefully.
Just had them.
That's awesome.
You could send them to like doctor's offices and things. Those things are usually about 12 months behind anyway. So just
yeah. All I have at my doctor's office is highlights.
Highlights still.
And I'm slightly too old for that magazine.
For kids.
Now. Yeah.
On to the email. Kevin and KC following up on his email regarding a VPN issue with Verizon's LTE cards. We talked about this a few weeks back. Kevin says there has recently been an update to their software. He says we are still getting private addresses in the 10-dot range, but now we are getting a 27-bit subnet mask rather than an 8-bit mask. For my purposes, this has fixed the problem because the issue subnet is outside of the range of addresses we use. If you recall, their addresses were being assigned out that they used internally, and so their cards couldn't get on the LTE network. However, he says, I'm sure there will still be conflicts with some corporate networks that are probably large enough to have numbers in that 27-bit range. But at least it's been solved for lots of people. Thanks for following up on that, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, have you guys bought your bricks yet?
Well, you know, Leah was showing off what bricks might look like on the wall once you do buy your own.
These yeah, so the brick will be held by a Sarah Lane.
Yeah, we don't attach them to the wall. Sarah just holds them up
yep.
against the wall.
And I can hold as many as you want to buy.
If you want so, to have your message crazy. On a brick facing attached to the wall in the entryway to the new Twit studio, by God, head over to bricks.twit.tv right now. Immortalize yourself.
These are really nice, too. I mean, they're nice, heavy. They got a nice sort of laminate.
Every day we will see your words as we come into the office.
And we'll say, thank you, John.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Fez.
Thank you, Ringo.
Thank you, Julian. All of those people.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Yeah. George, no thank you.
Whoever you are. George,
why did you write that?
I didn't have to look at you.
Bricks.twit.tv is a place to get those bricks if you would like. Please do. It helps us out and getting into the new studio a little faster. And thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. I'll be out tomorrow getting a tooth removed from my head. But we have Scott Johnson filling in, so it should be fine.
All right.
I'll be fine. Don't worry.
We'll
I'll be back on Monday.
Don't worry.
Corner
we'll be
North
fine,
Bush.
Tom.
TNT at twit.tv is the email address. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. I'll see you Monday. The show will see you in your sleep. They're always watching.
the blog tickler.
Yeah, what, Sarah the blog tickler? I kind of like that.
I like it.
The blog tickler.
It's like the dog whisperer, but...
That's going to be my superhero name.
The blog tickler.
Ha ha, it's the blog tickler.
More of a villain. Yeah, it's more of a villain name.
Wait.
Suddenly, there was Sarah tickling the blog.
That's why Tumblr's down. Tumblr's down because it's being tickled by Sarah the blog tickler.
That's the cutest evil laugh ever.
Thanks.
That's why nobody stops her. Tumblr's been down forever.